Next case is 2020-368, the State of Ohio versus Earl Jones for the appellant. Mr. Springman? You'll have to unmute yourself, Mr. Springman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. The test for prior calculation and design under Ohio's aggravated murder statute is not a bright line test. As this court pointed out in State versus Taylor, when it established three factor test for prior calculation and design, it is largely factually dependent. And what the state is arguing here today is that the facts in the present case clearly establish sufficient evidence to support prior calculation and design. The state would submit that that issue is not even a close call here.
Counsel, can you tell us the strongest facts that support prior calculation and design in this case?
Yes, Your Honor, I would direct you to the testimony of the most important state witness, and that would be Bryce Kaufman. Bryce Kaufman lives on Overdale Drive where the offense occurred, and he was coming home from work from Advanced Auto Parts when and he was familiar with Mr. Jones, and Mr. Jones drove by him at a high rate of speed. He was concerned about the rate of speed Mr. Jones was traveling, especially in a residential neighborhood where there were children. So he followed him, but he couldn't keep up with him, and he was traveling at speeds around 45 miles per hour. Well, he gets to Overdale Drive in front of the Prather's house where the offense occurred, and he sees Jones' vehicle parked there. It's parked diagonally, and it's illegally parked. So that's his vantage point of this whole incident, is from the street. So he observed Mr. Jones exit the vehicle from the driver's side, and he walked in front of the vehicle, and Mr. Neri was in the front yard in the grassy area. And Mr. Neri held up his hands, palms up, and there was absolutely nothing in Mr. Neri's hands. There's some evidence that Mr. Neri did take off a shirt. According to Mr. Kaufman, Jones took one step forward, produced a gun from under his shirt. He said kind of from behind to the side or from behind, pointed that gun at Mr. Neri and shot him one time. Mr. Kaufman said that then Mr. Jones took a second step and fired a second round at Mr. Neri, and that one took effect. Kaufman saw Neri's body jerk, and he let out a scream, and then Mr. Neri started to flee towards the garage area of the house. Well, Jones pursued Neri at that point and got off a third shot. And then when Mr. Neri was on the ground, Mr. Jones hovered over him and looked down upon him. Now, Mr. Kaufman didn't hear what was said between the two. And then after that, Mr. Kaufman said he made eye contact with Mr. Jones, and he was a little bit concerned for his safety, obviously. And so he left. He got in his car and he left. Now, I would also point to the court to the testimony of Jamie Ayer. He said that, he just also had a street view of this, not a house view, but from the street. And he said, according to Jamie, when Jones exited the vehicle, he made a casual walk towards Neri. That was supported by Samantha Rice, who she was in the house because she lived in the Prather home at the time. So she had a view from the house, which was a little different. And she described Jones' walk as determined. And I think that all plays into the third factor of the Taylor test, that this murder was not instantaneous or spur of the moment. There had been a long simmering feud that lasted months from December 2015 up until the time of the offense between Jones and Mr. Neri.
How do we distinguish premeditation from just the intent to kill?
Your Honor, I would, how I did it is I was looking at the legislative history of this, and the General Assembly according to their notes, they changed the language from premeditation to ensure murders committed with only momentary deliberation or instantaneous premeditation don't qualify. And then recently out of the 8th District, but they also went on and they went further in the notes, and this is important. I should point out that the legislative history says neither the degree of care nor the length of time the offender has to ponder the crime beforehand are critical factors in themselves, but they must amount to more than momentary deliberation. So under our former premeditated statute, you could form premeditation with a momentary deliberation, and they wanted to eliminate that as the worst form of murder in Ohio, aggravated murder. So some of the guidance I think that can help the court was a case that recently was decided by the 8th District that is in direct conflict with this case, to be honest. It's State versus Reyes Figueroa. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. In there, that was a similar fact pattern. There was a prearranged fight. The defendant and victim meet. The defendant takes one step out of the car and fires a shot at the victim and also hovers over the victim. And, you know, there were a few more shots that were fired in that case, 6 in total, but it's very similar factually. And the court, the 8th District said, prior calculation and design can be found even when the killer quickly conceived and executed the plan to kill within a few minutes. So that's about, you know, that's minutes, not seconds. But here I would submit to the court, we have a plan that was conceived that was more than minutes. I place a lot of emphasis on the fact that not only was this a long running feud, but, you know, in the moments leading up to this murder, Sierra Prather said that it was very unusual and she didn't understand why defendant Jones, I'm sorry, that's my motion detector, but defendant Jones was insistent that she was there, that Sierra was going to be present at her house. And she didn't understand why in the world he knew the answer to that. You know, they were texting. Jones knew that Sierra Prather was going to be present. And a rational inference that can be drawn from this evidence is that he was so angry and had so much animosity and jealousy towards Ms. Prather that he wanted her to see this murder.
Didn't the Court of Appeals say something about that the plan, the intent was for there to be a fist fight, that he arrived there, they were going to fight, I guess, and then it turned into this shooting instead?
Yes, that's the majority, and quite honestly, I'm perplexed as to how they can draw that inference. I think the inference here is that when you view all the vile text messages that were sent throughout the day between Jones and Neri, and especially the animosity that Jones held against Mr. Neri here, that I believe the inference can be drawn very easily that he planned to murder him. That is in the manner in which this murder was carried out, because they were supposed to, he wanted to make sure not only was Sierra present, but, you know, he's driving his car at a high rate of speed. He opens the door. He keeps the door open. He keeps the engine running. After the shooting is over, Sierra Prather says, well, then he made eye contact with me. Sierra's mother, Catherine Prather, said that, you know, Jones smirked at her. This whole thing taken in its totality, it's just so abundantly clear that there was prior calculation and design present that I honestly am truly perplexed at how the majority reached this decision on these facts.
Counsel, if we side with you, what would you want the ruling of this court to be in terms of taking these facts and applying them and giving guidance to the lower courts about when facts support a prior calculation and design as opposed to lower form of murder?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you for that question, because I put a lot of thought into it, and I know it's a challenge because you're going to, you know, a syllabus paragraph that I would envision is going to have some kind of facts in it, because the three-factor test that this court established for prior calculation, design, and Taylor, the court's admitted, and it's very accurate that these are factually dependent cases. And now we have, with the case out of the 8th District, Reyes Figueroa, which are similar facts, we have a conflict. So what I would ask the court to do is that anytime somebody is engaged, you know, this is a simmering feud, that would have to be an element in there. Jones is armed with a gun. And just because you're armed with a gun, I know what our Court of Appeals said, that doesn't mean you necessarily intend to use it. But if you, first of all, if that's the rule of law, then anybody who carries a gun, whether it's a CCW or they're carrying it illegally, can never be guilty of prior calculation and design. But on these facts, you would want to put some evidence in there that he intended to use the gun because he, in the manner in which he exited the vehicle, he made sure that he pocketed the firearm. He kept the door open and the engine running. And I would say that based on these facts, there was a substantial calculation, substantial scheming, substantial planning, and that all are appropriate factors to consider in determining prior calculation design.
So, counsel, is it merely we look at the three Taylor considerations and apply it to the facts here and then come up with our interpretation or our view of the facts? That's basically what, because there's no new law that you want us to write, is there?
Well, Your Honor, I analogize this to when the court accepts cases on reasonable suspicion and probable cause. Reasonable suspicion and probable cause determinations are factually dependent. So, for example, if a court takes in a case to determine whether or not weaving within one's own lane of travel amounts to reasonable suspicion, you know, does that amount to reasonable suspicion as a matter of law? That's a case that we need to flush out a little bit. Likewise with probable cause, if you're dealing like yesterday's case, Tidwell, with a tip, what facts do you have that amount to probable cause? And that's the same as the test is here, because in prior decisions, whether it's Palmer, Cotton, Taylor, this court has made clear that we have to look at the totality of the circumstances and deciding whether or not the state met the element of prior calculation design. So I think the analysis, and that's why this case is so important for the court to hear, is so it can give guidance to the appellate courts. And in an area that, one, they need it, we already have a conflict. I mean, this case, it definitely conflicts with the outcome of Reyes Figueroa. And that's important because now our appellate courts are going to be confused on some of the types of evidence that is needed to support prior calculation design. And I also would maintain this is really an important case because we're talking about aggravated murder, and this is the only offense in Ohio that carries life without parole or the possible death penalty. So it's vitally important to give guidance to the lower courts on what exactly constitutes prior calculation design. It's not easy. It's a challenge. And I think the more cases we have that tell us what kind of facts are needed to support prior calculation design, the more helpful it'll be to the appellate courts. I also
counsel doesn't. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Don't we also, as a reviewing court and the First District as a reviewing court, have to view the facts in a light most favorable to the prosecution in this instance?
Yes, and they did not. And that's another important aspect of this case is I, again, am perplexed why the Court of Appeals did not do that. It was a misapplication of the standard of review and for sufficiency of the evidence. Yeah.
So let me interrupt you there. So, for instance, The stopping the car, parked diagonally, leaving the door open, leaving the engine running, the jury was making the interpretation based on the evidence before it. So right. One person could look at it as, well, he had it left it that way so he could get away because he was planning it. Or another could say, oh, in the heat of the moment, he didn't bother to close the door or anything else. But if the jury's making the inference from those facts, the Court of Appeals has to look at that inference through the eyes of the prosecution. And is that a credible, viable conclusion or inference that a jury could make from those facts, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. And I would also talk about the background of this case says a lot, too, about the animosity between the two. And it was very clear that Jones did not like Mr. Neri. That's abundantly clear. And so that plays into it, too.
Right. And then when we're talking about sufficiency of the evidence, then essentially, if those inferences could be reasonably drawn, I mean, then it's difficult for the court to overturn what the jury found, correct?
Absolutely. That's why I really am perplexed as to why the majority did overturn this based upon the facts and the strength of this evidence. I really am. I just think it's overwhelming. And it's an easy inference to draw. I mean, even if you go further, I know she said, I believe, but Sarah Prather in her testimony said she believed it was all planned and the defendant Jones was, he was determined to get at Neri. And there's plenty of evidence to show that he wanted Neri out of the, or that he wanted Neri out of the picture. He was very angry. You know, there was a feud over, I think part of it was clear. The evidence showed that Jones was very upset that his son was bonding with Neri. I think that was an issue too, that shows some pre-planning and some animosity and anger that ultimately led to this this tragic, horrible murder.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Mr. Galliard.
Good morning, Your Honors. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. This will surprise you, but I see the case drastically different from my friend on the other side. The state's evidence in this case simply does not prove the element of prior calculation and design for aggravated murder beyond a reasonable doubt. The Court of Appeals opinion is thorough, well-reasoned, and should be summarily affirmed. Legally, as this court has held in State v. Walker, there must be a clear difference between mere purposeful murder and prior calculation and design aggravated murder. Importantly, there's no direct evidence of prior calculation and design in this case. There's no statement to a witness. There's no written plan. Jackson from the Supreme Court of the United States, Jackson v. Virginia, and State v. Tate from this court, both mandate that all the evidence must be considered and only reasonable inferences can be drawn from that evidence. The natural, reasonable interpretation of the state's evidence is that Earl Jones formed the purpose to kill during the split second that he removed the gun from his pocket, and that had there been a plan to kill, he would have gone to the prearranged fight location.
Excuse me, you're arguing about what inference you think should be drawn from the evidence, but that's not really the issue here, right? The issue is whether the inferences the jury drew, whether the jury could sufficiently draw inferences from the evidence, right?
Correct, as long as they're reasonable.
Well, in the totality of the circumstances, why wouldn't you said the evidence shows that in the minute he pulled his gun and got out is when he decided to kill the victim. But why isn't the other things, that plus the driving up, leaving the car running, leaving the door opening, how is that not evidence for the jury to find prior calculation and design?
Because it is exclusive of all the evidence. It's looking at those pieces of evidence in a vacuum.
Well, how is it exclusive? Why isn't it part of the totality of the evidence?
It is a part of the totality, but if we're going to draw an inference from that part, it has to be reasonable given the full picture.
Well, look at the other Taylor factors. Aren't they all met?
They are not met. The contentious history is without a doubt met.
Right.
The thought regarding the weapon and the thought regarding the murder location are not met. And when we go into the specifics, there are six or seven factors or facts from this case. And one way to look at this is to juxtapose it against it, Reyes-Figueroa. In Reyes-Figueroa, the defendant shot almost immediately upon getting out of the car. His leg is still in the car when he shoots. He paused when he shoots and holds and then shoots more. He directed the victim to follow him to an off-work premises location for a fight. And importantly, in Reyes-Figueroa, the victim was shot in the back. The state makes a big point of Kaufman's testimony and tries to say that Mr. Neri was fleeing. He wasn't fleeing. The physical evidence belies that consideration. Mr. Neri, no doubt, used his hands and attempted to protect himself, but he was not shot in the back. He has four wounds on his body, to his hand, to his arm, to his torso, both in the front part of his body. He did not turn and flee, and he didn't have time to turn and flee, because as soon as Mr. Jones pulled the gun from his pocket, it's three quick succession fires, and he doesn't have time to get turned. Certainly he would have if he had time, but he didn't. And so, that demonstrates
what happened then that feel clearly takes us out of the realm of prior calculation and design that makes it, I guess, so spontaneous that the jury could not have reasonably found otherwise.
There are a number of factors. The two of the compelling ones are that Mr. Jones does not fire until Mr. Neri advances, takes his sweatshirt off. Mr. Jones exits the car, pockets the weapon, calmly takes a few steps. Mr. Neri comes off the porch, out of the house, off the porch, down the walkway, down the driveway, at least half the driveway, towards Mr. Jones. At that time, Mr. Jones calmly asks, "Can I get my kid?" It's at that point that he pulls the gun out and fires. If this was a premeditated plan that we could reasonably infer, we would have to say, we would have to have something that supports that he went there with the intent to kill. But when we look at the other factors, there was an established historical pattern of quick exchanges involving the son because of this contentious history. And that is very thorough in the evidence, in the state's evidence. Sierra Prather testifies to it, her mother testifies to it, her sister testifies to it. That explains the parking spot. That explains the door being open. That explains the engine running. We cannot divorce
But isn't that just one possible explanation? That's the explanation you take from the engine running, for example. Why couldn't a jury infer from the leaving the engine running that he intended to shoot him? I mean, I don't understand why you think these are the exclusive inferences a jury could draw from these facts when they seem to be facts that could go in all kinds of different directions.
These aren't the exclusive ones, but whatever inferences are made have to be reasonable when looked at in the full pool of the evidence. And what I'm demonstrating here is the full pool of the evidence makes it unreasonable to infer that he had a premeditated plan to kill.
What
sufficiency analysis you want us to, or a manifest weight than a sufficiency analysis?
This is sufficiency. It's from Jackson versus Virginia. It's from State v. Tate.
This is not
a credibility determination.
What motivated Mr. Jones to fire the first shot?
His testimony is that he believes he's fearful for his life. He believes Mr. Neri has a gun. The jury didn't believe that.
Right. He didn't see a gun, right? No one saw a gun.
Correct. What so motivated?
Then when, so then when he fires the first time, if it's believed that he thought Mr. Neri had a gun, he fires on him the first time, there is no gun. What motivates the additional shooting?
These shots come in rapid succession. He removes the gun from his pocket and he shoots at Mr. Neri. The physical evidence demonstrates that. Mr. Neri did not have time to even turn and try to get away from him. We know that because all of the wounds on his body are to the front of his body.
Counsel, according to the appellate facts here, there was a back and forth about how they were going to pick up the child. Jones was going to pick up his son from the place where the child and Mr. Neri lived. Jones agreed and immediately texted Neri to reschedule the previously arranged fight to occur at the same time Jones would be at Prather's house. So he knew he was going to a fist fight. Is that correct? According to Neri, agreed to meet Jones at the end of the street. So they had this fight scheduled. So your client brings a gun to a fist fight. I think that doesn't that indicate that it took a little bit of, planning to do that?
No, Your Honor. As the state concedes, mere possession of the gun is not enough to establish prior calculation and design. And again, we have to look at all of the factors. And no one testifies that Mr. Jones shoots until Mr. Neri has tracked all the way from the house, down the porch, down the walkway, down the driveway. And no one disputes that Mr. Jones calmly asks, can I get my kid? It is at that time that he fires out of, to answer Justice Stewart's question, fear, anger, a hyperbolic combination of both, all are instantaneous actions or decisions and motivations. And those are the reasonable.
But can you clarify for me? I'm not sure I didn't understand. If they were scheduled to fight, and that was a scheduled fight, I didn't quite understand the question of can I get my kid?
They're scheduled to fight 7 houses away.
Mr. Jones wanted his child first before the fight?
No, if we look at the evidence, this is what Mr. Jones does. It's his MO. The entire contentious history, they arrange fight locations. Mr. Jones doesn't appear. Mr. Neri does. That is the exact track record. And in looking at all the evidence, the pool of evidence, and knowing that, it's not reasonable to infer that Jones's texts were attempting to locate Neri at that house.
Mr. Guy, you're really going to manifest weight, because if we're going to say it wasn't reasonable for the jury based on this evidence to reach its decision, that's manifest weight. But we're talking about sufficiency of the evidence, whether there was enough evidence to convict him. And I think, I understand what you're saying about the totality of these circumstances, but you started out your argument with it had to get to reasonable doubt. That's manifest weight. That's not sufficiency of the evidence.
No, Justice Bruner. To prove an element, the state has to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. In reviewing whether the state proved the element of prior calculation and design beyond a reasonable doubt, the reviewing court must look at the evidence, all of it, in the light most favorable to the prosecution, and can only draw reasonable inferences from all the evidence. They can't cherry pick the evidence to block out what does not demonstrate the inference that they want to get to. And that's what the state is doing in its reverse engineering of prior calculation and design.
But it also applies to the First District as well. If its standard of review is to review the evidence in a light most favorable to the prosecution, then with your totality of the evidence, it has to look at everything. And it has to say, if a jury could reach 2 inferences, one favorable to the prosecution, one favorable to the defense, it has to go with the one that's favorable to the prosecution. Am I right?
You are right, but that's not what we have here, and that's not what the Court of Appeals found. We have an inference that the state wants that's not reasonable. And then we have the only reasonable inferences to be pulled from all the evidence, which demonstrate prior calculation and design was not met. Another factor, or two other factors that support this conclusion, is that the son is inside the house. If he planned to murder Neri at that location, he is choosing to shoot directly at his son because the exchange is supposed to occur right then. What he was doing in terms of directing Neri up the street was getting him to a place away from the house because Mr. Neri lived there. Even if we don't believe that, and we can infer that Mr. Jones did know that Neri would be there, or he did plan to have Neri be there, the evidence still demonstrates, when we look at the entire pool of evidence, is that he does not shoot until the gap is seriously closed. And it may be, and undoubtedly, it is a irrational, indescribable decision once the jury doesn't believe self-defense. Nonetheless, it is instantaneous. The full pool of the evidence and the reasonable inferences that we can pull from them leads to that conclusion, which is what the Court of Appeals held. The third Taylor factor is that the shooting must be drawn out, and that is not the case here. The state's arguments to the contrary simply do not align with the record here. The state has never argued that the prior calculation and design element formed in a very short period from the time that he arrives at the house to the steps that Jones takes up to Mr. Neri. Any interpretation of that is forfeited or waived. But even if this court chose to consider those, when we juxtapose this against Reyes-Figueroa and we consider that Mr. Neri was shot very quickly, didn't even have time to turn his body, the only reasonable inference from that evidence is that this was an instantaneous act, an instantaneous decision. One feature of the state's argument that is worth talking about is that the reasonable suspicion and probable cause determination and the development of the area of the law there, that is important for law enforcement. And law enforcement has to clearly be able to anticipate how they can make probable cause determinations. Certainly reviewing courts have to know the parameters of prior calculation and design, but there's no confusion among lower courts on what the test is or how the tests operate. It's just courts viewing the specific facts in front of them and coming from to the conclusion that they meet. The state's inability to articulate a precise legal rule for this court to write in this case demonstrates that their appeal here is requesting nothing more than error correction. We thank ask this you. Court thank to summarily-
you, counsel, thank you, you've used your time. Mr. Springman, you have about a minute left.
All right, thank you, Your Honor. I would just point out that as far as the evidence demonstrating that Jones pursued Mr. Neri, not only came from Mr. Kaufman, who had the street view, it also came from Jamie R. and Jason Yazell. They also saw the pursuit.
Counsel, can you respond to your opposing counsel's last response? Why is this case nothing more than mere error correction? I mean, it seems that reasonable minds could look at this evidence and come to different conclusions. Indeed, the Court of Appeals, the two majority and the one dissenting judge viewed the evidence and came to the conclusion. How do we form, you know, take this case and then give guidance to the rest of the courts when they're encountering future murders and say, you know, this separates, but this fact in this case separates aggravated murder from mere purposeful murder? How do we rule and provide that guidance?
Your Honor, I would just point out that, again, there's no bright line test for prior calculation design. And the
can we form one based on this case?
I think the idea behind the Taylor test is that these are going to be factually dependent. And that's what it gets back to, where I'm analogizing this to reasonable suspicion and probable cause determinations, where, yes, we have the general rule, we have a test for those, but now we have to flush some of those out on a case by case basis. So this court has taken in a number of cases where it's applying the principles of Terry versus Ohio, Draper versus U.S. for probable cause, and New York or Brinegar versus United States. The definitions of probable cause are clear, and now the court needs facts to flush them out. And why that's important is because of Reyes-Figueroa case is in direct conflict with this. It's just it's similar. There was a prearranged fight in that case, and there was a shooting from an automobile, and the 8th District reached the opposite conclusion than the 1st District did. And so, and also I would point out that this court also considered in State versus Walker in 2016, also took in another case to explain and give guidance to lower appellate courts that, hey, that was a bar fight, that there was a instantaneous eruption of events. So in that particular fact pattern, as a matter of law, that does not amount to prior calculation and design. So with having said all that, you also have the backdrop is that we are talking about the most serious offense that you can commit in Ohio. You're talking about it's the only offense you can get, you know, life without parole and the death penalty. So I think that heightens the concern. And I would hope that the court would, you know, want to make sure that we have a series of cases where we can flush out the types of facts that amount to prior calculation and design. And I would say that this, you know, the defendant here, you're talking about, he's forming an intent, in my view, over a very long period of time. It began with his animosity towards Neri. That was present from the beginning, and it just heightened and got worse and culminated in this murder. And along the way, what we have is other issues that are important is we have somebody who, Jones, is carrying a gun in an automobile, and he's always carrying it. Well, just because somebody's carrying a gun in an automobile, that doesn't mean they can't form prior calculation and design. And this case is a perfect case to say that, because he had that gun, it was loaded, he intended to use it, he arranged for this fight, he changed the time of the fight to align when he would pick up his child. And then the way he parked his car and the manner he did, those facts just clearly show prior calculation design and would give—
Thank you, Mr. Springman. Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Gentlemen, we'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.